Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, hi. Thank you for calling in and coming on live with the Dr. Cappuccino Show. It's been a doozy week. I know many of you have sent emails saying, oh, I don't know how I'd make it without that show. But glory, hallelujah. Here we are. Thank you for tuning in. We have our illustrious, and yes, he really is illustrious, Dr. Reverend Colonel William Harrison. As you know, many of you know, he's been tuning in for over a couple of months now, and he has had some rock-bottom things to say. Some of you claim you've been helped. Well, you're going to be helped again today because our show is sticking right to the topic of the last few weeks. What kind of life should I be living? No one loves me. And, you know, people just go crazy with their lives and do crazy things. They don't know how they're going to get out of the things they've gotten into because they say, oh, you know, no one loves me. No one cares about me. No one wants to be my friend. And no one wants to be my lover. Nobody loves me. And so they figure they can live a life of doom and gloom and just live a life where they can get away with doing anything. And that anything really does not always work. I'm Marcia, Dr. Cappuccino, and I again welcome you. Dr. Harrison, are you on the line?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Cappuccino. I'm certainly with you and your listening audience again, and thank you for the invite, and I hope all is well with you, especially in your listening audience.
Of course, thank you. People tend to say we make a good team. So, you know what, I'm trusting that they are right. But, you know, love makes the world go round. We need help to show love, share love, act in love, and, of course, cherish one another in love. The great apostle said, and, you know, we always go on this religion, and you guys tend to like it because, you know, our listenership is going up and up and up because I guess we're all giving honor to the one that needs honor, wants honor, and has said, you must love me. And that is our God of the universe. But, you know, this God says, through his apostle, love never fails. Our fallen world lacks love. Now, what can we do as a last-ditch effort to live in love? Since we know whatever we've tried has not worked, whatever we dreamed of has not worked, whatever we thought we were going to do when we got big enough to do it, it does not work, it did not work, and it's not working for us now. If it were, the suicide rates would not be as they are. Colonel Harrison, when a person says, no one loves me, they tend to act up. To get attention, to get someone to turn around and look at them and say, oh, I love you. Is that always the right way to obtain love? By acting up and acting out. What is the problem with that?
The problem with that, Dr. Cappuccino, is that they will draw negative attention to themselves rather than positive attention. It's not the right way to go about seeking love, trying to find love, or get people to embrace and love them. Positive attracts, negative repels. People, again, got to, if they can develop a mindset, or if they can't develop a mindset of feeling good about themselves, again, back to examining themselves within, then they have to tap into other people and their other support groups and so forth. But this negativity and acting out just to get attention. For an example, illustration, the shootings, school shootings, the shooting in public places and so forth, mass shootings, killing of people is atrocious, an abomination, and we shouldn't be having that in a free society. But I'm of the impression that people who do that, when the experts profile them, they say they have either some type of psychotic condition or they are suffering from lack of love. So love can be found. One just has to tap into the right source, the right people, the right group, if they can't find it within themselves.
Well, you know, they're not doing that. The suicide rate showed that they're not doing that. Whoever they feel they can tap into, I guess, has been overlooked. Because, you know, when you think of the term birds of a feather flock together, people that are normally psychotic, you know, have long problems and history of mental illness and other medical mental issues, we find they seek out the same people.
that those kind of minds, they're called by the great psychologist Kessler Young, the holographic mind. The holographic mind can only extend so far north, east, southwest. It can only extend so far on a medical mental basis. So these people don't seem to have the wherewithal to seek out those that might be higher than themselves, more educated than themselves, and, of course, in the social, economic, civic fields. So these people don't tend to seek out other people outside of themselves. What other advice could you give a person that is seeking to love and show out to get love? They are not going to seek their own kind or the outside of their own kind. What can they do?
Again, number one, Doc, I think if they don't want to seek an individual, a friend, or relative, try to find out how they can become love and love someone else. There are support groups. There are support groups that they can seek out, and everyone, most people within their circle, have somebody that they can communicate to and relate with, unless they have a mental imbalance, that they can find someone they can talk to about their concerns, about not loving themselves, not feeling good about themselves. And again, if they don't have the ability because they're not mentally stable, that's different. That's probably maybe less than 10, 15, 20% of the population, whatever that number is, I don't know. I'm not in the medical profession. But we have to seek support groups. One of the support groups and one of the support organizations is the church. The other support group is community-based organizations and so forth. And there's plenty of them that have the weekly meetings, bi-weekly meetings, invite people into their circle so they can talk about their concerns, talk about their problems, to embrace them and try to give them support and help steer them in the right direction and get them to start feeling better about themselves and eventually then start loving themselves.
Yeah, that sounds like a very good cycle. I know here on the West Coast, a lot of the institutions are closing up. The funding has been cut. They say they are more interested in getting people off the sidewalks than worrying about mental health. But, you know, really, we could turn this thing around because it's a person's mental condition most of the time that has them on the outside looking in. And 85% of people that are mentally ill claim they can't really talk to their relatives because that's where it all started. They're in the home. So there's no love there. There's not been any love there. Then quite naturally, that's a hard sell. So, you know, I like that idea, and I know some of the listeners do too. Next week, we'll name some of those institutions that are still open, still have some kind of private sector money that can help them run it. But right now, people are groping, and running up and down the streets under the auspice of being isolated and, of course, homeless. So a lot of these people, that's some advice that they might would look at with suspect because they wouldn't be out there if they actually had people that loved them and that cared about them and that cared about their condition that would want to take them in. We cited an article last year called The Pews of Mercy. You know, when this homeless thing got so big and they were talking about it and saying that they didn't have no solution for it, I came up with a solution for the city of Los Angeles called Pews of Mercy, whereby the churches that were closed 6 days a week and 24 hours a day because they only came in on Sunday, some would come in for an hour on a Wednesday. But those churches remained, I saw, locked, trash all around the gates. No one was there, but they had room inside. They had a heating system inside. They had water. They had restrooms inside. They had everything for a human to exist on, more so than 2 hours 1 day a week. And I suggested that the churches in L.A. open the doors up on their off day and let the homeless come in and sleep on the pews. Well, our mayor, Eric Garcetti, thought that was such a great idea that he included that in some of his words of works for the homeless. However, I was told that once the briefing went out to over 2,000 or 3,000 churches for them to open their doors up and let maybe the deacons or deaconess become a pew captains, meaning they would stay overnight. They would spend one night a week. Another person there in the church would spend another night. You know, these people would take turns, church members, you know, that talk love on Sunday. They would take turns. Guess what happened, Colonel? Guess what happened?
What happened?
Their book came back to me that less than five churches said they would do it. It went out to thousands. We had churches, almost three churches in each block, in the city of L.A., county of L.A. 27 cities make up the county, one county. They didn't want it. Our pastoral sector of our city did not want it. Those preaching love and love your neighbor and all of that talk on Sunday, they refused to open up their churches. And they really didn't have a good excuse. Some said that they didn't have the bathroom facilities for overnight guests. They didn't have this. They didn't have that. They didn't have cleanup, non-custodial services. They refused to open up their churches overnight. From, I think he said, from 9 at night to 7. In other words, these homeless people would not even be there throughout the day. They would sleep on the pews, and then, of course, they would get up and get out. Nothing positive happened. What is your response to that as a man of the clergy?
It's appalling, Dr. Coppertine, and I'm saddened to hear that, because according to the book of Genesis, we are our brother's keeper. And we are to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, and then love, of course, the supreme being. Here's the commission for the church. It's found in, if I may reference, Matthew chapter 28, Gospel Matthew chapter 28, verses 19, 20. And it says, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I command you. Commend you, and lo, I am with you always, even till the end of time." So that is the marching order, not only for the church, but it's also the marching order for preachers. And no church should close their door to anyone without regard to race, color, creed, or their financial status, or like thereof. If the church does not help, then we are seriously, as a nation, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, justice for all, we're truly in trouble. The church is a cornerstone of a democratic society.
You know, I'm pretty sure some of our listeners are clapping their hands, because that is really true. Because if the church does not have the wherewithal to step up to the plate, especially in light of that future, then you know no other institution, the sports institution, economic institutions, socio-economic institutions, if they don't do it, these organizations are not going to do it, because, you know, here they have a tendency to give you a box of food, or either pull one tooth according to our medical benefits if they are homeless or don't have anything. That's not good enough. That is not going to cut the mustard. So truly, I believe some of our institutions have lost their savor. And, of course, if the church follows suit, we're really in trouble. But now when people get in trouble, or they're on their way to jail, prison, they are arrested by the police, I have been told that the first thing that comes out of their mouth when they ask, "Can we contact the next of kin?" "No, you can't contact them. They don't care about me. I don't care about them. No, my family ain't no good. They never cared anything about me." This tends to be, from what my research has shown, a big, big, big problem in the courtroom all the way back down to law enforcement. Is this something that our nation, America, needs to look at? There's so much hatred in the world, and 95% of all killings is not so much so that someone was hated, but because someone was not loved. What can we tell a person that says, "No one loves me"? I don't care whether we know them or not, they're listening or not, they may have a friend or not. What can we talk to these people about when they say, "I did this because no one loved me. I left my husband because he didn't love me. I don't want to be bothered with my kids. They don't love me. I'm quitting my job. My boss don't care about me. It all comes back being called love. So with the topic, what kind of life should I be living? And they say, well, nobody loves me, so I don't care. What advice can we give these people? What other help can we give the radio listening audience when they say, I did it because he didn't love me? Yeah, I cheated on my husband. He didn't love me. I mean, it all boils down to that. What can we do, Colonel?
It's a tall order, Doc. But with all of us committed, we can turn the corner and we can turn it around. I was thinking as you were speaking, a great preacher years gone by once said, he'd rather see a sermon than to hear one. I say that to say this. I say that to say this. Each of us who proclaim that we love ourselves, capable of loving ourselves, mentally in our right mind, if we exemplify love, if we show love through our walk, our talk, our ways, our actions, we can attract those out there who are seeking love, and we can be a magnet to attract them and embrace them and love them so that they will be inclined to love themselves. Point in question, two homeless young ladies. One used to come to church here a year ago, and she's gotten herself together. She's no longer homeless, and back home with her parents. I have a picture in my study of her. Another one, homeless, is now constantly visiting the church and so forth and so on. And we're helping to supply some of her needs, encourage her, and minister to her spiritually, as well as help with some of her physical needs, food and nourishment, and so forth and so on. But we got to turn this thing around. Those of us who say we know about love, that we love ourselves and we're willing to love our families and love our coworkers and love our friends, we got to be the example of love that people that feel that they have been betrayed and feel that they're not loved, we got to be the example that they can physically see and want to attach themselves to. That comes to mind, and I just wanted to put that out there, Doc.
Wow, that is a mouthful. And I think the listening audience knows somewhere deep inside of their soul that was some very good counsel. Now, we have another problem coming down through the pipeline, and it's our young people, because we know they're the ones that may have to give us a drink of water, may have to help us in bed and out of bed. You know, we live long enough. These young people have our nation very concerned. They're acting out some kind of a mental mind that says, I don't need anybody, I don't want anybody around me, I'm doing my own thing. I find that that's very dangerous because, you know, times pass. It was the sort of 18 to 30-year-olds that were very loving to grandma, helping grandma out, of course their parents, but they were really concerned about grandma. The major singers, such as Teddy Pendergrass, Boyz II Men, a lot of these people wrote songs that almost worship grandma. But we see a lot of youth today don't care anything about their grandparents, ancestors. They're just living a life of me to me now. Is that dangerous, Colonel Harrison?
Extremely dangerous, Dr. Coppentino. Love is something that has to be instilled, I believe, at an early age. And the obligation of the parent or parents to instill that in the child at an early age or a young age, so they can grow up feeling good about themselves, loving themselves, having high self-esteem. Because if we have a society of young folk, called millennials or whatever, that don't feel that they're loved, then they're going to go out and transgress the law. They're going to commit crimes. They're going to do not only criminal crimes, they're going to commit immoral acts and so forth, and they're going to target other people and just unleash on society. So we don't want to raise a group of people who will be misfits or malcontents. We want to raise a society that can embrace that which we have grown up to establish and pass on to them. The older folk have the wisdom. And so the young folk have to cleave to the older folk to get the wisdom so they can avoid some of the downfalls, shortcomings, and pitfalls in life and be able to live a better quality of life. So we got a bunch of young folk out here that's running around like loose cannons, then we really got a problem in society.
We have a problem, and society doesn't seem to want to look at that. Take in case the Parkland shooting. You know, they had a lot of that rose up telling gray-headed agents, politicians, and leaders what to do, when to talk, and when to shut up. They have since been silenced by a lot of death threats. You don't hear them or see them, David Hogg and his team, on TV like you used to, because militia and other people threatened to go down there and blow up Parkland altogether. Parkland students and whatever they stood for. So you don't see them hopping around on one foot on TV anymore, but you do have, because of their uprising, small pocketed groups that are actually thinking that they can take the law enforcement into their own hands and run amok. But what is so incredible about this is that they do not respect home, respect law enforcement. They do not respect the gray-headed ones, as the scripture says that they should. So we have a dangerous situation that is brewing and that is setting a match to a whole nation, a whole world of young people that says you can do what you want, be what you want, take what you want, not earn it, but take what you want. Do we see this subsiding, or do we see this as a problem that really should be put to rest now before it is too late?
Yes, it should be put to rest now, Doc. And those of us who are people of means and who have been blessed and who have some resources and who believe in helping others that can't help themselves, we got to get involved with our youth, and we got to interact with them and let them know that that the elders are not the enemy. The Parkland shooting was a travesty, not only to the victims and those who were injured and the victim's family, but it was a travesty to America, and the public school system, because our children should be safe. But we gotta touch these kids, get on board with them, interact with them, and advocate for them, become advocates for them. And that way we can show them, working together, that we can work in unity, we can work cohesively, older folk and younger folk, for the good of the whole and the good of the community and the good of the environment and the good of the public school system and so forth and so on. There has to be unity. There has to be a working together. It always has been. The family is a unit. The intentions of the family, past, present, and future, is for the family to be a unit as one, working together, loving each other, helping to assist each other, provide for one another, caring for each other, and so forth and so on. So we gotta embrace these kids and not let them think they need to carry the charge or lead the charge. We gotta help them lead the charge. It's a worthwhile charge to lead, and if they're going in the wrong direction, once we establish a relationship with them, we can redirect them in the way that we feel is the best to get the best objective accomplished.
Oh, wow. That was, I felt that. So something about what you said is right on target. Now, what about these older folks that say, you know, I'm scared of the youth. I don't want nothing to do with the youth. I don't want the youth around me. I don't like their music. I don't like their clothes. I don't like the haircuts. I don't like the way they wear their hair. I don't want them around me. So how can we encourage the world to embrace youth where they're at, and then, of course, offer the kind of information for living life skills to them, because we do hold the wisdom. There's no doubt about it. There's no if and doubt about it. What can we do?
Doc, if we feel that way, those who feel that way, I don't, I trust you don't, and I hope and pray many of the listening audience don't feel that way. That's a form of stereotyping. That's the problem, one of the main problems we have in the country today, stereotyping. Stereotyping with regard to race, with regard to social class, with regard to gender, with regards to age. We need to stop the foolishness. That's baloney. Since I don't curse no more, I use the word baloney. We got to remember that we once were youth. How are we so far removed from when we were youthful, when we were younger, and when we were energetic? Are we so far removed from that we have forgotten? We got to embrace our youth from and we're thinking back on our youthhood and use the wisdom that we have as adults to help that lead, that guide, and direct our youth in the right way. We, the elders, got to do this. If not, our society is going to progressively get worse.
And it gets worse. My. And I've heard that. I sincerely have heard that. Some of these young people don't want them around. I mean, it is just terrible. So with that being said, I think we have a solution for the youth. But now we're going to get back to some of us older ones. We're going to get back to some of us that have even said, you know, I'm going to take a handful of pills because no one cares about me. Can you give us, very quickly, we have about 4 minutes to go on the show, 1, 2, 3, 4, what can you and I and the listening audience do to help people come to a relationship whereby they want to love us? Because, you know, things are two-way streets. No one loves me. Why they don't? What are you doing? Can you help us out, Colonel?
Let us begin within our homes. Yes.
Three or four things.
Let's begin within our homes with our immediate family members. We know those who are introverted, and we know the ones that are extroverted. We've got to work on the ones that are introverted because something is going on with them that they don't want to express themselves, perhaps because their self-esteem is not good and they don't feel loved. So we've got to start within our immediate family members and extended family members. Then we've got to go beyond that to the group. We got to go throughout our neighborhood, identify, get to know our neighbors, who our neighbors are, interact with them, talk with them, and if we see that they're lacking something, they're struggling with love, self-esteem, whatever, need some physical assistance, whatever, we got to be in a position to do that, and it's incumbent upon us to do that. We all will either succeed together or we're going to drown together.
Thank you so much, Colonel Harrison. Thank you, listening audience, for coming back again to hear these great jewels of wisdom on the Dr. Copertino Show. We'll see you next week, same time, same station, and remember, somebody somewhere loves you. God bless you. Have a great weekend.